we find this footage of Bill Belichick addressing the team at the start of training camp or at the end of training camp of the 08 season. And he talks about how, yeah, I know what I normally say is this, but that season was really special. And I hope, you know, basically saying like, I hope you guys take a second here to appreciate that and realize how lucky we all were and how hard we worked and all of these things. And it was like, okay, this is the thing that we were always, you're always hoping for, which is that you find things that contradict the common sort of thought about something like this, a story where, you know, whether it's Amanda Knox or Tiger Woods or in this case, the New England Patriots, something that people think they have consumed to no end, but then you find something that completely turns the narrative on its head. And I just remember sitting there with Jeff and just kind of being like, oh my God, like this is incredible. And then when you think that Bill Belichick is giving this message to the team about savoring these moments, and then a few weeks later, Tom Brady's going to walk out onto the field and his knee's going to get crushed in by somebody on the Kansas City Chiefs, and he's going to have to face mortality, and his football mortality at least for the first time. It's just, like Jeff said, it's a kid in the candy shop moment where you start to say, okay, there is something here, and the thing that we hope we pull off might actually be possible if we get enough nuggets like this.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. Before we get to my guest this week, I just want to let you know I'm out on tour with my Broadway show, Permission to Speak. By the way, the show is directed by Frank Oz. Yes, that Frank Oz who created The Muppets with Jim Henson and is the original Yoda and directed movies like Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Little Shop of Horrors, Bowfinger. And we have animation by J.J. Settlemyer, who did Beavis and Butthead and all the SNL TV Funhouse cartoons. So really proud of it. And we are going to be in several cities coming up March 9th at the United Theater in Westerly, Rhode Island. Rhode Island, my hometown. Come on out if you're there. Or April 6th, the Marcus Center in Milwaukee. April 20th, we're going to be at the Tarrytown Music Hall in Tarrytown, New York. Go to my website, paulmecurio.com. Get tickets. Come out. It's really fun. It involves the audience. It's something different. There's a beautiful set. We do rear projection. So hope you guys can make it. And people have been loving it. And feedback's been great. Really proud of it. Hope you can make it. And quick observation or two here. I'm in a rut. I know I'm in a rut because I'm actually looking forward to a sandwich in the middle of my day. Like literally the other day, all I could focus on was a chicken cutlet parm. And I think I need to get some other thing going on in my life, a hobby or something, because all I'm doing is working and touring. And I realized that a piece of chicken fried with sauce and cheese on it should not be the highlight of your day. Also, my mother's 96. We have a handicap tag for her now that we can use when we take her around. And I got to tell you, I love my mother. I don't want her to die. I mean, because she's my mother, but also I lose the handicap ticket and then I have to park in a regular spot again. So just throwing it out there. That's all. You know what I'm saying? So I hope she lives to be about 250 years old. All right. So that clip you just heard was of Matt Hamacek, who is the director of the Dynasty documentary about the New England Patriots. And Jeff, who he's referring to, is Jeff Benedict, the writer who wrote the best-selling book that was the basis for the doc. And it's talking about when they first started to do some due diligence and research into possibly seeing if there was a documentary, and they found some footage at the Patriots organization that showed them a side of Bill Belichick they hadn't seen. And that prompted them to think there's a story here, because there's one sort of storyline about this particular person, but then there's another side to him that this footage revealed. It's a fantastic conversation with them about this doc, not because I'm fantastic, but because they are, and the doc is really, really good. And I am going to tell you, I'm a Patriot fan, but that's not the reason I think it's a good doc. I think it's just a great look into the human condition, how success affects people both positively and negatively. You don't have to be a sports fan to like it, but it's a really great doc and you should watch it and also read Jeff's book. So enjoy this conversation. Hope to see you out on the road with my Broadway show and my stand-up. I'm touring with my stand-up as well. Go to my website to check all that out, paulmecurio.com. Enjoy this conversation.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. My guests this week, very, very excited to have both these gentlemen on who are behind this incredible docuseries, The Dynasty, about the New England Patriots, that is on Apple TV Plus. Joining me is Jeff Benedict, the best-selling, New York Times best-selling author of the book, The Dynasty, as well as Tiger Woods, LeBron, and other incredible books. And Matt Hamacek, the director of the series, who you also know his work of Tiger Woods documentary, The Cartel Land, Amanda Knox, just an incredible director in his own right, and writer and producer and editor. So it's great to have you on the show, and really excited to talk about this really great work you guys did.
Thanks for having us on.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to jump in. I'm sort of a bit of a process geek, but how you take Jeff's book and turn that into a documentary, and what the interplay was between the two of you in sort of deciding, okay, what do we focus on? What don't we focus on? Because you had incredible access. You had access to all the key players in this. So how did that process work over time? And what, I think this is the first time you've worked together, I assume, or maybe not, but how just explain and walk us through that a little bit.
This wasn't our first project together. Matt and I worked together on the Tiger Woods documentary, which he directed, and was inspired by a book that Armin Katane and I had written, a biography. And I had never met Matt before. I didn't know who he was. He didn't know me. But through the, I got to witness what he did with the Tiger Woods story, which is a two-part doc on HBO. And I was pretty blown away at how he turned that into such a kind of a visual masterpiece. And, you know, I lived that book for 3 years, and then all of a sudden it took on this new life. And when I was writing The Dynasty, I was thinking, you know, it would be amazing if he would be interested in this story, but I didn't know if he would be. But I sent him the book before almost anyone else. He was one of the very first people I sent it to. And that's the genesis of how Matt and I came together on this project.
Well, there's another part of this story, which is that Jeff and I would touch base at least once a week while I was doing the Tiger Woods thing. And I would sort of give him updates, and I would send him things, and he would give me some feedback. And we were always talking. But the thing that I noticed was Jeff was mysteriously always on the road and always going to Foxborough, Massachusetts. And so eventually I just said, Jeff, you got to like spill the beans here. What's going on, man? And he says, I'm doing this thing. I'm all going into their archives, and I'm looking at all this footage, and I'm talking to different people and everything. And, you know, when he finally said, hey, do you want to come on and do this thing? I'm not a Patriots fan by any stretch of the imagination. I think I much more closely represent the rest of America and the way that the rest of America felt about the Patriots.
Well, I'm a Patriots fan, so this conversation's over. Hey, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah,
guys.
Yeah, exactly.
But good. I know.
Here's the thing that makes this stuff so great, though, and this is the reason I wanted to be a filmmaker in the first place, especially about documentaries, is that the best stories, whether they're about sports or like you talked about, I was an editor and writer and producer on things like the Amanda Knox story or Cartel Land, which are not at all about sports, is that underneath the thing that sort of drives the plot along, there's these deeply human stories. And the thing that interested me about Tiger and the thing that interested me about this story is that underneath, behind the X's and O's, you know, past the games and the Lombardi trophies, it's a deeply, deeply human story. And look, these guys that we've built up in our culture to be gods, right? That Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, Robert Kraft. Yes, they're on the biggest stage imaginable, but they're going through things just like we are. And, you know, it's the struggle to create something. It's the struggle to sustain it. And the struggle to keep the messiness of being a human and things like ego and betrayal and all sorts of stuff like that at bay. And the fact that these guys did it for as long as they did is incredible. But obviously part of the story is detailing how all that stuff seeped in and eventually brought the dynasty crashing down.
Yeah. And how did you sort of start working in the process of sort of, you know, taking the book as a source material, and then sort of how do you translate that into a series?
it's not necessarily the sexiest of answers, but the honest answer is that you don't. Like, you can't take a page and feed it into a computer and out comes a scene, right? That's just not how this works. So in a lot of ways, you have to start from scratch. But the thing, and I know you know Jeff a little bit, but his superpower is relationship building. That's why he is a New York, multi-New York Times bestselling author. That's why his stories, when you read them, play like a narrative film, basically. And what I inherited both on the Tiger Woods project, but also this one, is all of the trust that Jeff had built up, especially inside the building at Gillette Stadium with the people that he had worked with there. And that, along with Brian Grazer coming in from Imagine Entertainment, who is a lifelong friend of, not lifelong, but is a friend of Robert Kraft's, I think really gave us the freedom to go and tell the story the way that we wanted to and do the unvarnished telling of the story. Because without Jeff having done the book and built up relationships there, that would never have happened. And like I said, you know, it's Jeff's superpower, and anything that we were able to accomplish with this series, we owe to the things that Jeff did before we got there.
And did Brian get brought in through Robert, or how did that come about? Because to have Imagine behind this is a big, big get.
I mean, Imagine came in, the process was, you know, first of all, got to finish the book. Second of all, the process of finding a production partner and a streaming service happened pretty much in tandem. And so Apple and Imagine came on almost at exactly the same time, like within a month or so of each other. And offline, Matt and I were talking a lot because we were both like super eager to get working, like to actually work on the project. And some of my fondest memories, quite honestly, of this project were in the very, very beginning, before there was a crew, before there was really anybody else, it was Matt and I. And, you know, some of those really early trips that we took to Foxborough, to Gillette Stadium, which, by the way, was in the spring and summer when no one was around, which was kind of cool to go to the stadium when it's empty. And just seeing Matt was like a kid in a really good way, like a kid in a candy store kind of way. Like he was, and his mind was like racing fast.
Going through all the footage is what we were doing while we were up there. We were going through these archives, and that's, and it was just, and Jeff and I would be sitting there like, oh my God, like, you know, like I'll think of one example of this is, okay, so the mythology around the Patriots, and because they always kept everybody at arm's length, and the only thing you ever really saw was the "we're on to Cincinnati" type of press conferences.
Right.
And is that Belichick is this coach who never wants to look back and never wants to reflect on anything and always says, last year was last year, we're moving on, we're not thinking about that, right? And so Jeff and I get up to the stadium this one day, and we're going through their archives, and we stumble upon this footage of Belichick addressing the team after Spygate happens in 2007 at the beginning of the season, right? We're looking through all this footage of the locker room, and you see Belichick addressing the team and talking about Spygate and how to handle it and things like that. You see Teddy Bruschi rallying the team and coming in and saying, how do we feel about being coached by Bill Belichick? Oh yeah. And then you, and then this team, which started out as the underdog, you know, with the Bad News Bears of the NFL in a lot of ways prior to 2000 and 2001, had, you know, all of a sudden had gone from that to being the dynasty that had won 3 in 4 years. But then they turned into the evil empire, partly because of winning, but also because of things like Spygate and that's the way people perceived them. And and you look in the locker room and you see this footage, and as they go on that undefeated season after the Spygate story breaks, it's like you're on the Death Star with them, and they're going from planet to planet, destroying everybody in their path. But instead of sort of doing it in this sort of solemn way that you might expect, or in the way that you see in press conferences, they were having a party while they were doing it and enjoying every minute of it. And then they lose in spectacular fashion in the most humbling of ways to the New York Giants in the Super Bowl. And I know you're a Pats fan, so I won't make you relive that moment right now. But this all gets back to what we were talking about, which was Jeff and I are sitting there and we find this footage of Bill Belichick addressing the team at the start of training camp, or at the end of training camp of the 08 season.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how, yeah, I know what I normally say is this, but that season was really special. And I hope, you know, basically saying like, I hope you guys take a second here to appreciate that and realize how lucky we all were and how hard we worked and all of these things. And it was like, okay, this is the thing that we were always, you're always hoping for, which is that you find things that contradict the common sort of thought about something like this, a story where, you know, whether it's Amanda Knox or Tiger Woods or in this case, the New England Patriots, something that people think they have consumed to no end, but then you find something that completely turns the narrative on its head. And I just remember sitting there with Jeff and just kind of being like, oh my God, like this is incredible. And then when you think that Bill Belichick is giving this message to the team about savoring these moments, and then a few weeks later, Tom Brady's going to walk out onto the field and his knee's going to get crushed in by somebody on the Kansas City Chiefs, and he's going to have to face mortality, and his football mortality, at least for the first time. It's just, like Jeff said, it's a kid in the candy shop moment where you start to say, okay, there is something here, and the thing that we hope we pull off might actually be possible if we get enough nuggets like this.
Well, you do, because I follow the Patriots and sports in Boston very, very closely, and to the point where I felt like I knew almost everything. Obviously, I knew I couldn't know everything, but the brilliance of this doc is, as someone that knows a lot of this history, there is a lot of things I didn't know. And I got a keener insight into the arc of, is a great arc in the series about the arc of the team. But to me, this is not really about football. It's about, it's Greek mythology. And it's the, and to me, ultimately, with regard to one of the characters, and I don't want to give too much away, but one of them, to me, it's the thing that makes you great is ultimately your undoing. Mm-hmm. And the undoing, not just of you, but the team and the organization. And so I thought it was brilliant for that reason. Like, and what you see in this is this sort of push pull throughout. And you know, you hear these arguments about like, well, would Brady have been Brady without Belichick? Would Belichick have been Belichick? I'm not sure why we have to have those conversations. Personally, I think that they both made each other what they like. I don't think one could have achieved that alone or the other. Yeah. But I felt like what you really achieved was a window into the dynamic of how success can be both exhilarating and also very destructive. And I don't know if that was a storyline that you found over time, you know, because I would imagine as you're doing this, and I think I talked to Jeff about this in all of his books, it's like you start to discover things that you didn't realize, like you just described, and it starts to shape the narrative of the docuseries. How did that happen for you? And what surprises did you get as you were going through this, that you then, you know, made part of the storyline, both of you, for each of you?
Well, look, the thing is, there's this great quote by a documentary filmmaker, and it says that if you end up with the story that you started with, it means you weren't listening along the way, right? And I think this series is a prime example of that, because the thing that we have here that really nobody ever had before, whether, you know, in any medium in a way, was access to all these people. And right, they're on the record. They're saying it to camera, right? If there's been articles in the last couple of years where you see these anonymous sources and you can't tell, is this like the guy who's cleaning out the waste baskets who's the source on this thing? Or is this somebody right, who actually knows what they're talking about?
Right.
And so here, Jeff and I, and this this team of like 50 people that were helping us, you know, us make this thing. We have access to all these people. And these are the guys that were there. They're the ones who were in the rooms making the choices that led to incredible successes. And they were also the people that were there who witnessed this thing unraveling. And I couldn't agree with you more that this is not a football thing. This is a human story. You say Greek mythology. I say Shakespeare with footballs. You know, it's very similar. And it might be Tom Brady. It might be Bill Belichick. It might be Robert Kraft. But we would not have done our job if we couldn't put the audience in their shoes and say, well, I might disagree with the way that the choice that this person makes, but I completely understand exactly why they did it. And I think that's sort of what you want to do as a storyteller, is let the audience listen to these guys talk. And in a way, you ask the right questions and you can get out of the way a little bit and let them tell the stories of being in those rooms.
And you see the insecurities of everybody in this. Like, you would not think that Robert Kraft would be insecure, but he is, and Belichick is, and Brady is, and Brady's manifests itself. And, you know, when he hurts his knee, and now he's rehabbing, worried that, you know, Matt Castle might take his job. And then Jimmy Garoppolo shows up, and he doesn't like that. And what I don't see in the, again, I don't want to give too much away, but like, I don't see sort of, and Jeff, this would be for you, like that arc of Jimmy Garoppolo and how he just sort of went away, right? Like, was that something that Tom engineered behind the scenes? Because it seemed like as the series went on, everybody was clinging a little tighter and tighter to what they had, to wanting to continue to win, but also stay entrenched in their role in that winning and in that dynasty. And so, and in that gripping too tight, these tensions start to get created.
I actually thought that the way that Tom reacted when Jimmy Garoppolo got there was very familiar to me, because I was coming off the Steve Young biography, and Steve was the one who came in, you know, was brought to San Francisco when Joe Montana was still in the prime of his career, and he was the starter. And Bill Walsh brings in Steve Young, and he's basically nipping at Joe's heels, and Joe didn't like it. And Joe had some of the best seasons of his life after Steve got there. And so I think what happened with Tom is very similar to that. Just, he wasn't the one coming in like Steve. He was the one that was in the prime of his career. And in comes this kind of young rookie who, I think it was clear that Bill saw him potentially as a successor. And Tom had some of the best years of his career while Jimmy was there. I mean, the renaissance of the dynasty happens after Jimmy gets there, and they go to the Super Bowl in Seattle and beat them. And then they beat Atlanta and they go to Philly. And I just think that that's a natural thing to happen when you're a competitor like Tom or any of these other great quarterbacks. Matt could speak to that in Green Bay. I mean, when the young rookie comes in, that's touted as the next guy, of course they don't like it. But Tom reacted the way, I mean, to me, it wasn't surprising. He acted the way you would think he would. He just took his intensity and his perfection to even another level. And I don't think he did any engineering at all. I think he just, you know, did what he did. And when it came to the film part of this, I mean, I covered this one way in the book, and Matt covered it slightly differently in the docuseries, but I think covered it extremely well, because by that part of the story, we didn't go too deep into Jimmy Garoppolo. We covered it. It's there. Everybody knows about it, but we didn't make like an episode about it because we didn't feel it merited that in the context of the story we were telling in the docuseries.
Yeah, Jimmy's a stand-in, right? He's a stand-in for a very, I mean, in the telling of this story, you couldn't have put it better, Paul, because you talked about when he went out with that knee in the knee injury in 08, right? The tension for the rest of the series basically starts there, because Tom realizes it's not really about Matt Cassel. It's not really about Jimmy Garoppolo. It's a realization that the show goes on without you. We've all felt that at some point in time, right? That if you don't stay in and, you know, if you don't keep making good films or if you don't keep writing good books, like you're going to be sort of forgotten about. If your show doesn't keep going and you don't keep
We're all expendable.
Okay. So we all understand that. As Scott Pioli says a couple times in this series, it's a very normal human emotion, right? And so the tension that's created in 08 is this. Here's a guy who finally faces his football mortality. He realizes the show goes on without him. And he says, from that point on out, it's how do I not break? How do I not find myself on the operating room table? I'm quoting him here.
Right.
And then you have this coach on the other side whose incredible success was because he was the guy that was the first one to say, I'm going to move on from people a year early instead of a year or two or too late after we paid them a max contract. And here he's looking at the undisputable data that says at a certain point in time, at a certain age, quarterbacks fall off a cliff, right? And so this guy who uses logic and reason to make his choices, and that's what his superpower is in a lot of ways, in addition to creating this culture of selflessness, et cetera, et cetera. These two forces are going against each other, right? Which is Tom wants to play till he's 45. And on the other end is a guy who says, I'm looking at these facts and it says, that's not possible. And that's the tension, right? And so,
But there are a lot of things here. So in other words, what I was taking away from it as I watched the series is, how does Belichick not understand that this is an art, not a science? Football is not a science. It's an art. Just because something has data doesn't make it a science. It's an art. And the art is those moments in the locker room and motivating people to believe that they can do more than they think they could do, to run at one extra lap, to run 1/10 of a second faster in a 50 yard or 100 yard, right? And so he didn't read the room. He didn't read the room. And I define room as the whole culture of football, not literally the locker room, right? When you have a guy like Tom Brady who has dedicated himself to the point where he is like your top assistant coach on the field, and your quarterback. So even if his arm does drop off a bit, which it didn't, you want to lose that brain? You can get anybody to do that. You can't get a lot of guys to do this. And so what jumped out at me was that Bill became more and more entrenched in the way to do it and didn't see what he had in front of him. And Tom, I always thought, well, he just was a guy that wanted to be perfect at what he does. And I think he does. But the motivation behind it, and I don't slight him this because I would do the same thing, was fear. Fear of losing his job. Fear of him being to Jimmy Garoppolo what he was to Drew Bledsoe. And that's why for me, it's, you call it Shakespearean or Greek mythology, it's those rudimentary, raw emotions that make this so friggin' compelling, because it just shows how fragile we are. These massive, like they're each at the top of their silo, right? Kraft, Brady, Belichick. And they're like three little insecure boys. It's my ball. No, it's my ball. I mean, that's some of what I'm taking away from it.
Don't you think that there's this interesting through line of these people who, forget those three guys in particular, but a lot of people who are really, really successful are a combination of insecurity and confidence and incredible hard work, right? Because how do you go, and if you're Tom Brady, you know, at a certain point he passes Joe Montana, right? And he has more rings than anybody else does. And then, you know, he has six, and then he goes, and then he leaves, and he goes to the Bucks, and everybody knows that line that was reportedly said by Giselle to Tom on the football field after he'd won with the Bucks, and she says, "What more do you have left to prove?" And he still came back for another year, right? That's what makes these people great. The rest
And I'm not. I'm not.
The rest of us. I know you're not, but the rest of us mere mortals. when we say, hey, why doesn't so-and-so just, you know, win the Super Bowl this year and then go out off into the sunset? That's such the obvious perfect thing. It's like, yeah, because they don't think like us. And that's what makes them great. Right. And that's when you get to like understand these people, that's the part of them that is the superhuman quality, right? But the part that you're describing is the part that makes them just like the rest of us, just like the mere mortals like us, right? And I think you're spot on. And I felt this for everybody involved. I understood exactly why Bill did what he did. I understood exactly why Tom did what he did. And I understand exactly why Robert did what he did. And allowing those viewpoints to bounce off of each other, to me, is why you say things like Greek mythology, is why you say is why I say things like Shakespeare, because if you're setting up a straw man just to knock him over, that's bad storytelling, right? You have to see everybody's side. And Jeff, I think, and I have had a number of conversations about that. And, you know, that's the thing that we kept. I texted Jeff last night and I said, isn't it crazy that those conversations that we had when we were driving up to Foxborough in like the spring of 2021 about like, I hope we can get these people to be honest and talk about these things for real. Like it happened. And now other people are starting to get to consume these things and just how special it was that we accomplished that goal of just getting this story out there in the way that we hope it could be told at some point in time. And it was a nice little moment last night to just like reflect on that. And like this journey that Jeff and I have basically been on for almost 3 years now is just insane.
Yeah, I mean, and Jeff, jump in here if I don't want to, you know.
What I was going to say, Paul, listening to that is, first of all, you know, Matt's right. It has been a crazy journey and a good one. And I think one of the things that, you know, I gained a deep appreciation for, and I think Matt did too, is that Tom makes it hard on everybody. And I'm saying this this is a positive story, but Tom is so unusual. He's so unique. He's so like, there's not really a precedent for a player like him that you can't really fault people for underestimating him at times, because there really wasn't anyone you could look to in history and say, you know, well, this guy did that. He was constantly doing things that haven't been done before. And perhaps the greatest of all those things was his longevity. In a game that is, it's a game of attrition and people don't survive that long. I mean, this is not George Blanda hunting for the Raiders, you know, in his 40s. This is not that. This is a guy who's leading teams to Super Bowls in a very violent game. And he's the man in those situations. Mm-hmm. And I think what came out of the interviews with Matt that I didn't appreciate as much when I wrote the book, but I got a lot more during the interviews for the docuseries, was that even his teammates, there was a kind of distance between his teammates and them. And this is not to say they didn't all love Tom and Tom didn't love them and they were great on the field, but off the field, you could see that all of them kind of looked at Tom like he is different. He's different than all of us in a lot of ways. And as he got older and he had a family and children and his life became larger and larger and larger, he became lonelier and lonelier and lonelier, you know, in terms of people who could really relate to Tom Brady.
Was it because he was pushing them off or because they were intimidated with how great he was and how focused he was? And that was, again, this all goes to why this is so great, because we're talking about another kind of human emotion, right? That's being elicited out of those around him, because right? He never comes off like an a-hole to me or whatever to his teammates. But what is it about that is it? It's his teammates just being like intimidated.
I think it's just the kind of mystique that you saw, and some of the guys talked to Matt about this on camera. But think of guys like Rob Gronkowski and Julian Edelman and Devin McCourty, Matthew Slater. These are the stars. They're the bulwark of the second half of the dynasty. But by the time they arrive in New England, Tom Brady's been in the league for a decade. He is the most established guy. So you walk in as a rookie and there's that guy in the locker room. And so I think it's usually you don't get to play with your idols.
Yeah.
And Tom played for so long that guys that idolized him in high school and college were coming into the league and suddenly catching passes from him or trying to defend him in practice. And I just, that is the unusual nature of this story. And I just think, one of the reasons that I wanted to work with Matt on this is because I knew that he would look at those things, like the complicated relationship between Bill and Tom and Robert, the trio of them, but also between some of the players. And particularly in the back half of the episode, you really start to see that as Brady, Belichick, and Kraft have been together now for, you know, when you get to years 12, 13, 14, 15, and new players are coming into that established system, it's really interesting to watch whether you care that much about football or not.
Yeah, I mean, look, dynasty to me means greatness. And the overarching word I would use about this, about the book, about the series, about the Patriots in this time frame is greatness. But what informs me through the book and now even crystallized through the documentary is greatness comes about through a number of things: intense motivation, wanting to be the best, fear, insecurity. Now you figure out individually what percent of what goes into that cocktail, that mix, right? But to me, and this is all okay, I mean, I'm insecure and I feel like it's never enough. And I feel like I did something and I'm like, okay, but then I want to do the next thing. So I understand that. I'm not saying I'm Tom Brady or any of those guys, but like that to me, I think this series and the book should be required reading and viewing in middle school, because I think there are so many great life lessons here, some of which can motivate, but some of which can be, sort of a bellwether for things to come if you don't approach things the right way, right? Because that dynasty is going to end, but it didn't have to end there. And it didn't have to end that way. And that was human beings getting in their own way. And that's what the sad thing was, right? And I'm talking about a fan, being a fan now too. Like, motivation is a big word for me in this, because when it gets to the point in the series and in the relationship between Tom, and maybe now we're like 2017, 2018-ish, and it's just tense, right? And someone in the series, it might have been Scott, but somebody in the series says, both are getting motivation anywhere they can get it. Bill and Tom were the same in that respect. When the tensions were high, they were finding motivation. So what motivation were they finding out of that tense relationship? Like, I'll show him. Brady will be like, I'll show Tom. Tom's like, I'll show Bill. Like, what? How do you see what that motivation was in that instance?
Well, I want to answer that question, but I also want to go back just a little bit earlier than that moment when Michael Holly, who's an incredible journalist, is talking about that dynamic, that relationship. What he says is you have to think about the arc of that relationship and how it started. Tom comes in, he's the 199th pick. Bill comes off of what somebody says is an underwhelming stint in Cleveland. They start out as these outsiders. Robert also is not part of the billionaire club of sports ownership and has to leverage everything to even get the team in the first place. You're absolutely right. The answer to the could Brady have done it without or could Belichick have done it without is absolutely not. And that applies to pretty much everybody that came through that building. They all collectively did this together. When you talk about the thing that makes this so magical is the fact that they sustained it for 15, even 20 years, and they kept this thing going. And yes, the arc of Bill and Tom's relationship obviously is according to the people that we interviewed who were there, is the part of the thing that led to the unraveling. But I wondered as I listened to these guys talk that part of what sustained this thing was a lot of the work that Robert did behind the scenes, but a lot of it also was, I wonder if there was a more perfect fit as a coach for Tom Brady, the guy who would always keep the carrot just out of reach, right? And never gave what Robert describes as that sort of fatherly approval that Tom made.
Right.
What Robert says is something that Tom was always seeking.
Right.
And, you know, you talk about how this relationship was ultimately part of the undoing, and it was, and that's an important thing, and we cover that. But I always say that you always want to make sure you show the nuance and complexity in a relationship, especially one that lasts 20 years, right?
Mm.
And yes, it gets to that point. But I don't think there could have been a more perfect quarterback. And I'm not talking about X's and O's here. I'm talking about motivation, because you said motivation is a really important thing. And you also talked about the sort of the motivation for Tom may have partially been that carrot being out of reach. And then you talked about who's the person in the locker room who's motivating those guys with heart and all that stuff. Similarly, there may not have been a more perfect quarterback to be paired with Bill Belichick.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, look, it's Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid now. Patrick Mahomes says over and over again, he's a perfect quarterback for me because he lets me be me. I don't think Patrick Mahomes would be Patrick Mahomes if Bill Belichick were his coach. He's too intractable. He's too entrenched. So that's a perfect union. And I think you're right, this was. But what I'm fascinated by is at that point, 2017, 2018, the tensions are at its highest, and yet they go on and they win another Super Bowl, despite this, like, everybody talks about it. They're like, you go in the locker room, nobody's really, you just won a crazy game. It's like a morgue. Like, it's just like, everybody's got their head down and they're just getting their job done. And I'm thinking, well, Belichick's got to say to himself, well, what more do I need to achieve with Tom Brady? I got a bunch of rings. And Tom says, I got a bunch of rings. Why don't they just move on then? Like, what was it that's keeping them in this sort of dysfunctional relationship? You know, it's like a marriage that's on the skids and you keep trying to make it work for the kids. Okay, so who are the kids here? Why were they both trying to continue to make this work when they were both so miserable at that point?
They told us it was because they knew that Paul was out there and he was a deep fan of the team, and they just had to keep it going for you, basically, is what it all came down to.
Thank you. Thank you. I knew.
I think that, you know, in all seriousness, that it's easier to see the brilliance and the skill sets of Tom and Bill because they're on display every Sunday. Like, you know, millions of people watch them every week, and most people envy them and despise how good they are because they're on the other side. Patriots fans sit there and revel in it. But the point is, anybody can see how good they are at their jobs. And I think, you know, for owners in general in the NFL or any sport, you don't really see what owners do, right? Their jobs are largely never on television. And they don't wear a headset. They don't throw footballs. They don't practice. They don't do any of those things. And most times, you know, owners are really capable of messing things up. And I think what was really unique here, and it's important, and I think the docuseries does a great job of putting a lens on this part of it, which is that Robert, in this case, has a really critical role. It's just invisible. But he is largely responsible for keeping Bill and Tom together for so long. And as you work your way through the series, I don't want to do spoilers, but every time there's a problem that involves Tom or Bill, you see the owner, you know, he steps in, but not in a visible way. And particularly toward the end of the series, those last few years, you referenced that last Super Bowl victory over the Rams. The truth is that, you know, probably that Super Bowl, more than any, Bill has one of his greatest coaching achievements.
All right, because he goes to zone. Yeah.
And Matt does a great job really illuminating that in the series.
Yeah.
But also Robert's role in that Super Bowl is that, you know, Tom was ready to go well before that. And it was really thinking about it. And obviously I wrote about that in the book, but it's different when you see it on camera and they're actually talking about it. And I think that's what you're seeing, though, is this is why it's not about two people, right? It's not who's more important. This is a trio of three people, and Robert's relationship with Bill is really different than his relationship with Tom. And I'm not saying one's better than the other or superior. It's the fact that they're different that allowed him to work with Bill and work with Tom. They had different needs to keep this train going for 20 years until it just couldn't go anymore.
And Robert has alluded to that, not just as in Doc, but in other, you know, in different interviews that he's done, that it was not easy keeping these guys together. And he's got a funny way of describing Bill Ill as a pain in the whatever, which is really funny. But I did have a question for Matt about, there were several places where you see Kraft recognizing that things were going off the rails.
Yeah.
And he's a brilliant businessman, as is his son, Jonathan. There's, you know, there's a team that works. Why didn't he kind of step in, or they as an ownership group, in a couple of instances a little sooner, or maybe a little more forcefully, and sit them both down and go, all right, guys, you got to work this out. Like, it just felt like, as a fan watching this and just as someone viewing it just to take it in, that was he hesitant? Did he feel that wasn't his place? I'd be curious to know about that, because he's so astute. He, as you know, Jeff just said, like, he's the orchestrator all this. He put these people together. You know, he's the architect of this, really. How does that not get dealt with slightly differently at times?
Well, I want to go back with that question to a decision that Robert made early on in this story, which was the thing. I'm a fan of the Green Bay Packers. That's my team. So we don't have an owner, so I never have to deal with this. But the thing that you always hear about owners, the one thing that you never want to hear is about the meddling owner, right? That's the kiss of death, right? And very
Jerry Jones.
Well, that's an example of a dynasty that got derailed because of things like that. That's what we're talking about here. But early on, I think one of the things I learned a lot getting to make this thing, because you get to listen to these people talk and think, and I got to listen to it over the course of, in some cases, multiple 3-hour interviews with these people. But one of the things that Robert did early on is that he realized the talent that he had around him. And I'm talking about Tom and Bill and everybody else, whether it's Ernie Adams, Scott Pioli, the other players, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm going to get out of the way and hold, and if things are screwed up, I'll hold people accountable, but I'm going to get out of the way. And these choices, and Bill was given an ability to make decisions, not only as a coach, but also as a GM, in a way that I don't think really, that there are very many people in the history of the NFL that had the power that Bill did. And Robert kept it that way for a very, very, very long time. And you say, well, why didn't he do more? Why didn't he step in? So what we see basically as this story unfolds is the one or two times that he said, okay, this thing's about to go off the rails. I'm going to step in here. And he says, for the first time in 20 years, I'm going to bring Alex Guerrero back into the fold, because that's the only way that this thing's going to happen. And he makes these very calculated choices at times to do this. And simultaneously avoid some of the things that other owners have done to undo their dynasty. And then at the very end, and this is something that I personally pressed him on a couple different times about, is that last episode, and when we're going towards that Rams Super Bowl, and he says this great line, because I think in a lot of ways, he's probably the most reflective of all of the people, right?
Absolutely.
He says, sometimes I'm a little bit naive, and I hoped, and it was my desire, that winning was going to be this magic elixir that kept these guys going, because people think that he had these sides in it and that he was playing favorites and things like that. And I think that what he talks about is this deep desire to keep the two of them together as long as humanly possible. And when you hear that, you're like, of course. Why would there be any other viewpoint of this thing?
Right,
you've got literally the two greatest human beings on the planet at their jobs, in the history of their jobs, basically. Mm-hmm. And why wouldn't you do anything to keep that going? So again, you get back to this thing of it's these are sort of these godlike figures that have been built up over years, but you can sit there and you can say, I can see this happening through Robert Kraft's eyes, and I can understand the decisions that he made. And
but you know, the reason this is great is because you leave things unanswered, right? It's not fun if you like wrap it all up for us and then tell me how to feel at the end of it. And what you for me, what you left open was, well, maybe there was a place or two that a step in by ownership could have happened a beat earlier, and it maybe would have avoided things getting so tense. Hindsight's 20/20, so I'll go to Robert Kraft's quote: "Nothing is perfect in the world as much as we would like it to be. This is how life is. It's what happens, how you deal with it, and how you move on." And I thought that was a great quote and a great way to essentially end, or be toward the end, because I think that's the kind of thing kids should learn and all adults should learn, is like, no matter how hard we want to be perfect and try to be perfect, it's never going to be perfect. And we can only get as close as we can get with a sincere effort, you know? And I thought that really sent, that was a really good message that you got out there through the doc.
And also that things aren't binary, right? That there's so much of our culture today is everybody wants something to be neat and tidy. They want to know who the good guys are. They want to know who the villains are. Mm. Is somebody, you know, evil or good? It's just, and that is not the kind of story we're here to tell. And this is not what the story is. And that's the other thing that people have to realize is that, like you said, if you're coming here looking for easy answers, they're not here. And this is complicated, and that's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's a great doc. I know you guys have to jump. It's in 10 parts. I wish it were longer. It's on Apple TV Plus, The Dynasty. Jeff, Matt, thanks for being on. This has really been a great conversation for me and hopefully our viewers and you guys, but it's really, really great work, and congratulations.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, there you go. Jeff Benedict and Matt Hamacek. I hope you enjoyed that conversation, and check out the doc, and please come see me March 9th, United Theater, Westerly, Rhode Island, April 6th, the Marcus Center in Milwaukee, April 20th, the Tarrytown Music Hall in Tarrytown, New York, and more. Go to my website, paulmercurio.com, and we'll see you guys next week.